Suspension of Employment Contract, Dr. Virek Prum. Abstract. This article primarily explains the legal framework governing some frequently used arguments for suspending employment contracts. Although the Arbitration Council has built a consistent jurisprudence on suspension cases triggered by serious economic difficulty or illness, doubts still remain with regards to certain obligations and the issue of inaptitude. This article, therefore, provides some comparative insights and speculates on future directions. Key terms: suspension, economic difficulty, illness. Is suspension good for all? The current Cambodian labor law provides a dozen different grounds on which a suspension may be triggered, plus other potential grounds not prohibited by law. Among popular grounds, economic difficulty has been frequently argued before the Labor Arbitration Council, and so has been illness. Other grounds for suspension, such as accident or act of God, remain underdeveloped. However argued, it is sensible to observe that suspending employment contracts could serve both the employer and the employee during hard times. The employer who temporarily suspends an employment contract due to a serious economic difficulty, the employer's main objective being to make profits, won't have to pay the employees legally suspended, while the employees won't lose the job, should return to work after the suspension ends, and shall not lose seniority. Suspension seems to be a temporary win-win solution. Suspension due to serious economic difficulty. The last ground for suspension mentioned in Article 71 of the 1997 Cambodian Labor Law allows an enterprise to resort to suspension when the enterprise faces a serious economic or material difficulty or any particularly unusual difficulty which leads to a suspension of the enterprise operations. The suspension shall not exceed 2 months and shall be under the control of the labor inspector. On the surface, this statutory provision requires two conditions. Suspension cannot exceed a period of 2 months, and suspension must remain under the control of an inspector. While the total 2-month cap seems quite straightforward, the under the control of an inspector condition caused uncertainties and needed to be clarified. The Arbitration Council has interpreted this clause as creating two requirements for the employer: 1. Notify the labor inspector of the intended suspension, and 2. Obtain a prior approval thereof. Missing either requirement will render the suspension unlawful, which, in turn, entitles the unlawfully suspended employees to claim full pay. This unlawful suspension means full pay jurisprudence has consistently been followed in the last 10 years. For instance, in its arbitral award 1913 dated February 20, 2013, the Arbitration Council ordered the employer to pay full wages to the employees, who were told to stay home for a few days due to insufficient work available, because the employer had failed to notify the labor inspector of the proposed suspension. In effect, the council found that the fact that employees were asked to stay home due to insufficient work available without notifying the labor inspector is not a suspension case. Therefore, the employer must pay full 100% wages to the employees for the days the employer did not have work for them to do, 1913, page 22. By saying that it was not a suspension case, the arbitrators effectively meant it was an unlawful suspension. In another award 160/14 dated July 9, 2014 concerning a 1-month suspension case, the Arbitration Council used its familiar reason based on an older decision 08/07 dated February 20, 2007, which interpreted the meaning of under the control of the inspector clause as incorporating two requirements, namely, notifying the inspector and obtaining a prior approval for the intended suspension. This often quoted 2007 arbitral award also relied on the interpretations made in previous decisions in 2005. Thus, there are well-established precedents that not only require notification to be served to a labor inspector in advance, but also, and even more importantly, the latter's prior approval before any suspension could lawfully take place. Moreover, the 160/14 award has another particular significance in that it requires that the inspector's approval be made in writing, page 11. A verbal approval would not be an available defense for the employer. The council applied its jurisprudence in a recent case 192/15 decided on August 21, 2015, in which an employer had suspended employment contracts not once or twice but 4 times in the course of less than 2 years. In this case, the employer paid 50% of the wages to employees and claimed that there was mutual agreement with the concerned employees to do so. As such, the employer argued that those were not suspension cases and, consequently, thought that the Enterprise was not under the statutory obligation to notify the labor inspector of any of those four instances. If only the arbitrators would agree. But no, they did not. In order to reject the argument of the employer, the arbitrators needed to define what would constitute an economic difficulty. They found that the fact that the employer had insufficient amount of purchase orders, as the employer claimed, necessarily constituted a serious economic difficulty, the very basis for triggering a suspension. Essentially, the arbitration council is of the opinion that the fact that the employer did not have sufficient amount of purchase orders, which, in turn, created insufficient work for the employees and caused them to take days off four times, was a clear factor confirming the serious economic difficulty facing the employer according to Article 71. Therefore, the arbitration council treats those four-time day-off takings as suspensions. 192/15, page 9. In a nutshell, the decade-long jurisprudence regarding suspension cases based on economic difficulty has advanced four conditions: two-month cap, notification, prior approval, and the written requirement for the approval. What about the case of illness? Suspension due to illness under Article 71, 3. Absence caused by illness certified by a doctor is regulated under Article 71, 3. This absence is allowed for a period of up to 6 months but can be extended until there is a replacement. This Article 71, 3, absence must not be confused with the period of disability resulting from a work-related accident or occupational illness regulated under Article 71, 4. Cambodian case law covering Article 71, 3, illness as a basis for suspension has been, fortunately, straightforward. The usual reasoning adopted by the Arbitration Council concerning sick leave mainly gives effect to the wording of the law. A sick leave with a medical certificate is treated as suspension and, therefore, the sick employee would not be entitled to receive pay. In other words, it would be legal for the employer to deduct pay from sick employees because sick leave signifies suspension. Suspension effectively means that there is no pay when there is no work. The Arbitration Council, in its award 329/15 decided on January 14, 2016, restated the interpretation of Article 72(1) of the 1997 labor law previously made by another award 113/14, which had stated then that the Arbitration Council is of the opinion that illness properly certified creates suspension of the employment contract between the employer and the employee. Consequently, when the employee is absent due to illness, this results in suspension of the contract, by which the employee is not obligated to work for the employer. Likewise, the employer is also not obligated to pay the employee unless there is an exception which makes such payment mandatory. 329/15, page 20. Applying the no work no pay reasoning, the award 113/14 of June 20, 2014 remains crucial in another aspect as well, in that it went on to interpret the meaning of the phrase, unless there is an exception which makes such payment mandatory. In a quite clear manner, the arbitrators in 113/14 recognized that exceptions may be created by five different sources only, namely, labor law, collective agreements, mutual agreements, internal policy, or even established practices, 113/14, pages 21-22. The employer must also pay specific benefits, if any. For instance, the so-called financial reward that could be earned by garment workers who come to work regularly, fixed at $10 per month under notification number 230 of July 25, 2012, would not be entirely lost just because the worker was absent due to illness for a few days. Indeed, the amount of this reward may be reduced in proportion to the number of days of illness taken, 113/14. However, if the employer generously gives such financial reward without being legally required to do so, i.e., employer not covered by notification number 230, that employer is welcome to do so in exercising the power to direct and manage, while the employee who has taken leave might not benefit from the remaining proportion, the Arbitration Council, 222/16 dated October 26, 2016, page 16. In the case of a suspension due to economic hardship, the labor inspector plays a vital role, as we have seen above. Cambodian law does not seem entirely clear with regards to the start and end dates of a suspension due to illness. Ideally, though, such matter should be determined by the doctor who treats the ill employee. For instance, according to the French jurisprudence at least, the effective start and end dates of the suspension are decided by the treating doctor and are clearly indicated on the medical certificates. The French case law also requires the ill employee to inform and justify the absence to the employer, out of respect for the obligation of loyalty. Certain obligations during suspension, comparative insights. As shown above, suspension allows a non-performance of the major components of an employment contract to take place. The employer is not obligated to remunerate, the employee is not obligated to work. The suspension of these obligations does not, however, mean that both parties can get away from other obligations. Article 72 stipulates that during suspension the employee must still uphold the obligation of loyalty and confidentiality, whereas the employer must still continue providing accommodation if any. While the Arbitration Council needs more cases to help provide answers to specific situations, the French jurisprudence has fittingly devised several practical solutions. Indeed, during the period of suspension, the French courts would enforce the following. Employer has an obligation to pay employees official paid holidays. Employee must abide by the obligation of loyalty and may not perform professional activity for another employer, including taking part in a training program with a competitor. Employee must provide information necessary to the continuation of the professional activity of the employer, such as providing an access code to a computer, providing a file indispensable for performing a certain job, etc. Employee under suspension due to illness does not commit an act of disloyalty by simply announcing that he refuses some future working conditions upon his return to work. Going on a pleasure trip or evading medical control of the employer may not lead to a sanction. The French courts make a distinction between loyalty and collaboration, by which the employee is required to demonstrate good faith while any complaint about disloyalty must be supported by a proof of damage. Aptitude following illness, comparative insights. Granted, Cambodian labor law protects employees under unspecified duration contracts, UDC, quite well. Article 74 stipulates that in case of UDC, no termination can take place without a valid reason relating to the employee's aptitude or behavior, based on the requirements of the operation of the enterprise, but that's about it. So far there have not been enough cases that could help bring in clarity concerning the application of this aptitude clause. In the French legal parlance, recalling that the original draft of the Cambodian labor law was in French language, aptitude is often understood as physical aptitude. In the French system, the treating doctor is tasked with ascertaining the physical and mental integrity of employees with an aim to preventing professional risk in the enterprise. In this manner, the doctor pronounces on the physical aptitude of the employee and may propose all sorts of measures of adaptation so as to conform to the employee's aptitude. He can give an opinion on an aptitude with reservations or declare inaptitude which would prohibit continuation of the contract. The challenge against the doctor's opinion may be brought before the labor inspector, who will then decide by himself on the aptitude of the employee. In the event that the inspector does not support the inaptitude conclusion of the doctor, any termination would become without cause. In guarding against some employers in France who did not wish to go on keeping employees who have become inapt, a new law of 1992 and a new set of case law have created an obligation on the part of the employer to perform reclassification of the employee by proposing a modified job which should as far as possible be comparable to the previous job, by taking into account the opinion of the doctor. The employer has only 1 month to either reclassify or lay off the employee in the absence of reclassification. If neither reclassification nor termination occurs within the month following the medical examination, the employer is required to pay the same salary that the employee was receiving prior to the suspension. If the employer does not pay, the employee is entitled to avail himself of the right to break the contract, which will be treated as a termination without cause. Concluding remarks. As Cambodian labor law develops partly through the interpretations by the Arbitration Council, new challenges will keep popping up. While there is a body of precedents governing suspension cases triggered by serious economic difficulty and illness, there remain many issues that need addressing, such as detailed obligations during suspension and the matter of accommodating returning employees from long illness. I have attempted to proactively shed some light by providing examples from the French system, which is much more sophisticated thanks to numerous legal amendments as well as the continuous rigor of their jurisprudence, which our system would do well to adapt in the future. While I have only briefly reviewed two grounds for suspension, other grounds are no less complicated on which the interpretations by the Council remain scant. Hence, the importance of bringing more cases to trial and, more importantly, the prerequisite in keeping on learning comparative laws as the world gets smaller through legal convergences.